the time? Okay. So, a few months ago I was driving in the Old City. I actually managed to, it's very hard now to get your car into the Old City Jewish Quarter. But I managed to do it. I was with my family. We turned the corner. There's a sharp turn there, if you're familiar with it. And we turned the corner, and I was going pretty fast. I turned the corner, and there is a group of people that I wasn't aware of because it was a sharp turn in the corner. And I had to come to a screeching halt on my brakes. And luckily, the car stopped just as it was about to hit one of the people in this group. Baruch Hashem, no one was hurt. What I found very surprising was that nobody in that group moved. The fact that there was the car made noise as it was stopping, and no one seemed to be bothered by the fact that the Omris were killed. And they just continued on there, walking very slowly, the whole group, someone was leading them, just in the middle of this road, this little alley in the Old City. And I was trying to catch, it was late, I was trying to catch Mincha, and I was growing impatient because they were just walking very slowly, just in the middle of the road, not moving to the side. So I started to honk them, like a good New Yorker. And nothing. Nothing. Maybe it's a group of deaf people, perhaps. They weren't blind, because they'd probably be able to hear the horn. But they just weren't moving. And I kept on honking. And I grew up in New York, and I'm honking, honking, honking. And then, finally, one of the guys turns back to me, and like in a real Israeli gesture, goes like, we heard you. You know, la, la, take your, have patience. So I was like, I was getting worked up here. Like, what the heck? Just move to the side. What is your problem? And they didn't move, just kept on their way. And I was thinking about this. You know, here they were, their lives were in danger. Didn't seem to bother them. Guy's honking his horn is not making any kind of impression on them. And on top of that, they're saying, like, we heard it already. It's enough. Stop. Stop blowing the horn. Are we any different? Are we any different? Our lives are apparently hanging in the balance. Just read the Machzor. Hine Yom Hadin. The Yom Hadin. This is the day of judgment, the day that we're deciding what's going to be with us. And we hear the whole month we've been hearing, but most of us have been hearing the whole month, we've been hearing the shofar blowing, telling us time to make some kind of change. Time to take your life seriously. And what have we done differently? Have we moved over to put our lives out of danger? Are we just continuing on a merry way? And not only that, saying, must speak already, it's enough. It's enough. I got the message. And I'm going to continue to ignore it. Shana Bet guys may recall this particular story. April 18th, 1587. Remember that day? So that's the legend that on that particular day, April 18th, 1587, Shaul, Wall, Captain Allen Bogan. Where is he? Not here, huh? Okay, so Donnie Ellenbogen is a great, great, great grandson. He obviously has something very important to do right now. He couldn't be here and make it. But Shaul Wall Katzen Ellenbogen was actually appointed king for a day of Poland. Religious Jew, there was a dispute. Who should be king? And the law at that time in Poland was If they can't decide who should be the permanent king, then they appoint a temporary king. And so it was, they chose this Shaul. He was actually called Wool. It was added because it means elected. Katzenelnbogen, and this religious Jew, was appointed to be king for the day in Poland. And as the story goes, that on that particular day, he passed many laws. Okay, Gal, you with me? He passed many laws that was very favorable to the Jewish people on that one day that he was king. And then they appointed the new king. That was it. King for a day. Now there's a maisa that they tell over the Chassidisha and Chassidisha Svarim of something a little similar but yet different. That in a particular kingdom in Europe, the way they chose a king was as follows. They would go into a few ministers from the government would go into a pub. They go into a bar. They would sit around a guy who's a poor guy who's already started drinking a little bit. They would say, offer to buy him more drinks. They would slip something into his drink. And he would, at that point, he would pass out. They would pick him up. They would bring him to the palace, put him into the bed of the king, dress him, first they would dress him in the royal pajamas. And when he would come to, he would have all these people standing around waiting and say, "Good morning, Your Highness. Is there anything we can get you this morning?" "What the heck? What's going on here? I know I had a few to drink, but this is unbelievable." And he said, "Sorry, Your Highness? What did you say? What would you like for breakfast this morning?" "I don't know. Eggs, French toast." And whatever he asks for, they bring. And he's like, this is unbelievable. He's pinching himself. Oh my gosh. And this is just continues. And whatever the king, him, says, they do. He has servants at his beck and call. And he tries out, he tests all the different kind of things. The next day he asks for hot dogs for breakfast, they bring him, whatever it is, and they do. And this goes on for a year, and at some point, one of those ministers who's drinking with the king slips something back into his drink. They undress him, put on his old clothes, bring him back to that same bar where they picked him up, and they leave him there. And then he looks around, he's back in his old surroundings, he's like, "Oh my God, but I'm the king." Right? He's telling all the people in the bar, "I'm the king." "Yeah, you're the king. Sure, you're the king. You had one too many again." And this is what they do. They just, every year or so, they would just choose someone else, put him in that bed. He thinks he's king, and they would act like he's the king. And this would just continue. Until one time, there was a religious Jew. He doesn't have to be religious, actually. And he doesn't have to be Jewish. But he's brought into the king's bed. And the same kind of thing, and he's like wondering, "One second, how did I get here? It doesn't make any sense. I know I'm not the king. I know I'm not dreaming. I know this is real. How did I get here?" And so he doesn't stop asking the questions. Yeah, they pretend he's king, and he gives the orders, and they're following it. It's all great and wonderful, but he's trying to, "I have to get to the bottom of this. It doesn't make any sense." And so what he does is, he concocts a plan where one of his close confidants, one of his servants, he slips something into his drink, some kind of serum that gets him to tell the truth. And the guy spills the beans. He says, "Oh, it's great. Yeah, we just pulled this guy off. And then a year later, we just return him to where he was. And this is how we're basically running the country. And the king thinks he's running the country. We're really running the country." I got it. So he gets it. So the next day he says to one of his people, he says, "What would you like, what laws would you like to pass today? What would you like to do today?" He says, "I'd like you to purchase an estate in the next country. Purchase me this magnificent estate." They purchase them. And the next day he says, "Take a bag of silver, gold, and diamonds from the king's vault and place it in that estate." And this is what he does each day. Another shipment of valuables goes to that estate. And sure enough, the time comes when they slip something into his drink, they return to where he was, and he wakes up, and he's the happiest guy in the world. He's all set. He's got this estate waiting for him, with all these valuables just waiting for him. The nimshal, I think, is quite obvious. We are all in this world. And a lot of people go through this life and they never ask themselves, how did I get here? What is it? What is it that I'm supposed to be sorry? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing in this world? What is the purpose here? Why was I created? Rosh Hashanah is the time when we have to ask ourselves this question. What is the tachlis, my friends? What is the point? I did not choose to be here. And yet here I am. And I can continue going through and just going through the motions and never really bother to ask myself that deep question. But what's going to happen is at some point they're going to slip something into my drink. They're going to put me to sleep again. And I'm going to wake up, hopefully, and I'll have nothing to show for it. Or, alternatively, is that I make it my business to prepare. We are all king for a day. I want to share with you a letter. A letter from a very famous Israeli. Profound letter. He's writing this when he was a teenager. Dear Rita, I live but in a world that's shattered and ruined. I study, but I don't learn a thing. Why am I like this and not different? I'm sorry that I'm not like the others. I've thought more than once. I'm born, I live, and in the end I die. I'll turn to dust and my grave will be trodden by others who in their turn will die too to preserve the endless cycle of life and death. And if I live in order to die, why do I live at all? Why was I born? In that case, it would have been better not to have been born at all. I am consumed from within. I live without purpose, aching and crying out. I despair. At this moment, I'm going to sleep. Why? What for? So I can get up tomorrow and repeat the process again? Do I need sleep? I'm not tired at all. This is a moment of emptiness, a moment that holds nothing. An insect, which lives only a few days, probably feels that its lifespan is enormous. Perhaps that's why we believe that we will have an eternity ahead of us. But man does not live forever, and he should put the days of his life to the best possible use. He should try to live life to its fullest. How do I do this? I don't have a clear answer. I only know that I don't want to reach a certain age, look around me, and suddenly discover that I've created nothing. That I'm like the other human beings who dash about like so many insects, back and forth, never accomplish anything, endlessly repeating the routine of their existence, only to descend to their graves, leaving behind them children that will merely repeat the same nothingness. Why am I writing this to you? Because each and every minute is made up of seconds and of even briefer fragments of time. And every tiny fragment ought not to be allowed to pass in vain. I must feel certain that not only the moment of my death shall I be able to account for the time I've lived. I ought to be ready at every moment of my life to confront myself and say, this is what I've done. Miss you. Yoni. Yoni Netanyahu. Yoni Netanyahu, who gave his life, saving many Jewish lives in the famous raid in Entebbe, wasn't
a religious Jew, but a very thoughtful Jew. Someone who valued what life is. Someone who asked himself that question. Someone who wanted to make sure that when he left this world, he had something to show for it. You see, we are all king for a day. If you look at the expanse of the world, right? If the world is 6,000 years old, so that our time in this world is like a day. It's like a day. And we're all given everything we need. Question is, what are we going to do with it? So we read this week's in last week's parsha, which is the parsha that always precedes Rosh Hashanah. Parsha Nitzavim. It says, Re'ei nasati lefanecha yom es ha'chaim es ha'tov es ha'mavis es ha'ra. I present before you life and good, death and bad. And we're supposed to choose. What kind of choice is that? Is there really a doubt what we would like to choose? Is anyone going to choose death over life? Bad over good? It's not a choice. Of course, there's no suffix what we would want. Gemara in Erevin says as follows. Tana Rabbanim, Shtei Shanim Amechza Nechelku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, Halalu Omrim Noach Lal Adam Shlo Nivra, Yoser Mishanivra. Valalu Omrim Noach Lal Adam Shanivra, Yoser Mishalo Nivra. For 2.5 years, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel were arguing, is it better for man to have been created, or better for a man not to have been created? It's a very, very strange machlokas. They were arguing about it for 2.5 years. Gemara continues, Nimnu v'gamru, Noach lo la'odom shalo nivra yoser mishanivra. So they finally took a poll. They finally decided together that it's better for man not to have been created. Like Yoni Netanyahu said, if I live my life this way, it'd be better if I wasn't created. That was the decision. Better to not have been created. What was the machlokas? And that they come to a conclusion, Nimnu v'gamru, it's better not to have been created. How does that make any sense? Better not to have been created? What chance would we have if we weren't created? How does that make any sense? So it's a very beautiful idea that, again, I apologize to Shana Beck guys if they heard it, if they remember from last year. The Meshiloach. The Rebbe of Ishbitza, of Mordechai Yosef Liner, says, Medayik in the Lashon of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Noach lo la'odom shlo nivra, Noach lo la'odom shlo nivra. It doesn't say tov lo. It doesn't say it's better. It doesn't use language of better, or it's good for man to have been created, good for man not to have been created. Rather, it used the language of Noah. What does Noah mean? Comfortable. Is it comfortable for a man to have been created? They decided it was not comfortable for man to have been created. Is it better for man to be? Of course it's better for a man to be created. Told low, certainly it's, we wouldn't have a chance when we would not be created. But comfortable? No. Life is not comfortable. Life is not about comforts. When we talk about choosing life, there's no real choice between good and evil. Most of our choices in life is not between good and evil. Most of our choice in life is between what is comfortable, what is less comfortable, but right. Am I going to choose a life that is more comfortable, even if it's not as good or right? Or am I going to choose a life that is right, even if it means
I'm going to be less comfortable. And when I mean comfortable, I don't mean in the way of, you know, the nurse who is the old Jewish man in the hospital, and the nurse says to him, you know, tries to prop up his pillow. He says, "Are you comfortable?" And he says, "I make a living." I don't mean it in that sense. I mean in the sense of doing things that are easy. I choose the path of easy. I don't choose the path that is more challenging. Even if it means it's right. I know we can give many examples. We can spend the next hour giving examples. But I'll leave it to you to try to figure out how to plug it in. Because if you're choosing a life of comfortable, then it would have been better that you weren't creating. Life, sleeping is more comfortable than running, playing ball. It's more comfortable. Especially in this heat. Right? Just hanging out in my room playing some retarded game on my phone is more comfortable than going to the Beis Medrash. I can choose that. But then why be created? Why come into this world? Rosh Hashanah, the call of the shofar is asking us to the questions that Yoni Netanyahu is asking himself. Why am I here? Am I here to seek comfort? Am I here to amass a lot of things that will make my life more comfortable? Or am I here to give? To do, to produce, even if it's not so convenient, even if it's not easy, even if it means I'm going to have to make certain sacrifices. I'm going to spoil a movie for you, those of you who haven't seen it, and if you haven't seen it, it's your own foolishness. And that's the last scene in Saving Private Ryan. Everybody dies, except for Private Ryan. Too bad for you. Everybody dies, except for Private Ryan. And as Tom Hanks is been riddled with bullets, and he turns to Matt Damon, Private Ryan, and he says to him, "We've given you your life. Now go and earn it. We have been given life, my friend. And we ask in Rosh Hashanah that we be given another year of life. Our job is to go and earn it. It is a gift. We are made king for a day. We're not only mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kadosh Baruch Hu, as sons of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we are princes. We have the ability to do whatever we like. And the question is, are we just going to go through Rosh Hashanah and then the rest of the year not bothering to ask ourselves the question, what is the topic? What am I here for? And this goes to all of us, I'm talking to myself. Am I going to appreciate the fact that every moment, every minute, every fragment of time, I can do something positive? I can amass silver and gold, read Torah and mitzvot, that will be there for me when I leave this world? Or is it going to be another time wasted? Chief Rabbi of Israel, Chief Rabbi before even the State of Israel, it was called Palestine at the time, Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi Herzog, he had traveled after the war, after the Holocaust, traveled to Europe, and then he made his way to America, and Rabbi Beryl Wine tells over this story, that he was a young child in Chicago, and Rabbi Herzog came to HTC, to Skokie Yeshiva, as it's known, and he gave a drasha, and all the Jewish community came out to give honor to the Chief Rabbi of Palestine. Men, women, children, and he was a young boy at the time. He comes into the Beis Medrash there and he gives a drasha, which as a young child he did not understand. But then he stopped at the end, and when he was giving the drasha, he was just radiant. And then like the color left his face, and he said to the crowd, "You know, I came now from, I did not come from Jerusalem, I actually came from Rome. And while I was in Rome, I met the Pope." Pope was a notorious Pope of the Jewish people. "And I came to the Pope, and I met with him. Being that I'm Chief Rabbi of Palestine, I got an audience with the Pope. And I said to the Pope, you know, there were many hundreds, if not thousands, of families that left their children at the doorsteps of churches and monasteries, hoping that at least the child will survive. Even if they don't survive, the child will survive. And now these children are scattered throughout Poland, raised by the church. I come on behalf of the Jewish people that we want these children back. Please, it is only proper to give honor and respect to the dead, that their children be returned to the Jewish people so we can raise them as their parents would want them to be raised." And with tears and sobbing, the chief rabbi said, "But the Pope rejected my plea." He said, "Once a child is baptized, Rahman al-Islam, he cannot leave the church. He must remain with his Christian family. I cannot heed to your request." And he continued to cry and say, "We've lost these children. We've lost these children that survived, physically survived, but they're lost to the Jewish people." But then he looked at the crowd and he said, "But we have you. We have you. You are here. You can live lives the way those parents and grandparents wanted their children to live. You can be the replacement. It's up to you." Have a Shana Tovah.